Well, thanks everyone for joining us for this week's Tech Law 10. I'm Jonathan Armstrong here at Duane Morris in a wet and windy London town. Eric, you're somewhere sunnier, and you've been thinking this week about the cybersecurity issues, particularly as they apply to law firms.
That's true, and I have to confess, it's not so sunny here. We have a foggy marine layer, but it'll burn off and hopefully be nice soon. Lawyers have been apt to preach to their potential and actual clients about how they need to protect their data in terms of cybersecurity. But what about lawyers themselves? Lawyers should know how to protect information belonging to their firms and their clients, right? Well, according to a recent Wall Street Journal article, many lawyers do need to do better and coming up to speed when it comes to cybersecurity. According to this article, hackers who are intent on insider trading, for example, might target attorneys who handle merger and acquisition transactions. They could put links in text messages that, when clicked on smartphones, activate malware that could log keystrokes and even record phone conversations. As a result, lawyers who rely on mobile devices, which, of course, Jonathan, is practically every lawyer these days, needs to take care, such as encrypting messages, and not using Wi-Fi connections, which can be vulnerable to information compromises. Additionally, at least one Los Angeles law firm recently received emails that indicated that they were from law firm members. However, they actually were Trojan emails that were intended to lift data from the firm's computers. Ultimately, the emails were traced to servers in China and were akin to emails sent to a client software company that the firm was representing in a large case against the Chinese government and some computer companies. Apparently, cyber attacks against law firms are on the rise, although it's not fully clear how pervasive the problem is, as law firms are reluctant to state publicly when they've been hacked. The concern in this area, nevertheless, is real. Attorneys are charged with the responsibility of protecting as sacrosanct the privileged and confidential information of their clients. They therefore need to be sensitive to cybersecurity risks that concern not only their firms, but also their clients. And perhaps not surprisingly, some of our legal bar associations here in the U.S. are encouraging attorneys to take appropriate steps technologically to protect client information as part of their ethical duties. And the American Bar Association may be coming to the table soon as to whether such obligations should actually be incorporated into the model rules of professional conduct. So gaining some traction here on our side of the pond, and I'm curious, Jonathan, what's happening in your neck of the woods, to mix metaphors.
Yeah, quite a lot in this area, actually. A couple of things strike me off the top of my head. We have had a regulatory inquiry here into a law firm called ACS Law. ACS Law baited hackers. They were involved in cases trying to recover money from individuals who were alleged to have looked at content online without paying the appropriate fees for that. And the ACS lawyer involved reportedly gave an interview to the press where he said he wasn't interested in hackers. He was more interested in what he was about to have for his lunch, and effectively implied these were kids who sat in their back bedrooms and couldn't do him any harm. Well, they did. They hacked into the law firm's system and stole some client files and published them on the internet. That led to a regulatory investigation by the Information Commissioner, the data regulator in the UK, and also to an investigation by the regulatory body of lawyers, so the Solicitors Regulatory Authority, our equivalent of the local bars in the US. I think it's important to remember that even though that particular incident was related to electronic records, the requirement here doesn't stop there. The ICO has also brought recent regulatory activity over people losing paper-based files. So it's not. It also applies if you've got a file of papers and you're taking it home. That needs to be locked in your boot of your car, the trunk of your car, whilst in transit, for example, rather than left on the back seat, and especially not left on the back seat with the windows down should we ever get hot weather over here. It also applies to faxes. So last month we had a regulatory inquiry into a hospital that had faxed records to the wrong number on, I think, 50-something occasions. Why? Because they'd incorrectly programmed the speed dial on their fax machine. So whenever people thought they were faxing one recipient, they were actually faxing somebody else instead. And the thing that I see a lot of, to be honest, amongst lawyers, is train conversations. I have had a number of occasions where I've been sitting next to people on trains and they've been talking about a deal that they're involved with. I can remember in one case I was, you know, I'd got so much information, I just kept writing it down on a pad, and then whilst I couldn't work out what the deal was myself, I went along to a colleague who does more M&A work than I did, and he was able to identify exactly what the deal was, who the vendors were, who the purchasers were, and who the advisors are. And that's share-sensitive information. And as well as having issues under data privacy laws and professional bar responsibilities, that could also potentially lead to insider trading actions. And again, here we've had a number of lawyers charged for their part in leaking data relating to share-sensitive transactions. And then I suppose the final thing I'd say is I know one Italian in-house lawyer who says that he has sacked a law firm for these type of train conversations. I think he was on a train where he overheard lawyers talk about a different client's matter, but he used the law firm concerned. And he said he removed them from his panel on the basis of if they hadn't educated their lawyers well enough to stop leaking this information on trains, then the only thing he could do was to vote with his feet and use a law firm that did train individuals. So I think it is a big issue. I think you're right, Eric, that it's the tip of the iceberg, really, the things that get into the public domain, because obviously there's a willingness to hide these matters. But I know that there are definitely cases. I know of one case where, from what I understand, a major Wall Street firm settled an action where an asset was being bid for and the lawyer circulated all of the bids to all of the bidders. And surprise, surprise, that had the basis of suppressing the value that the asset went for. So I think there are a lot more of these cases about than we know about, and I think you're right to stick your head above the parapet and highlight these issues, Eric.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think it is the tip of the iceberg. Lawyers and law firms are going to do their best not to have these things go public. It's not only the attorneys, but the employees of law firms have to be trained properly. So, for example, if we're in an elevator and, you know, some legal assistants working on a deal, that they don't start inadvertently revealing terms of the deal. The intent might be pure and innocent. They might actually be talking to somebody in the know, but if you're on the elevator, if you're on the train, if you're on the plane, and others can hear you who are not part of the transaction, it can go in a direction that you don't like. So this is a good topic for us. I'm glad you were able to join us, Jonathan. I hope the weather improves there. I know you're anxiously looking forward to the Olympics, as we all are, and you get to be there at Ground Zero. So this has, this has been our Tech Law 10 for the week. We'll be coming back to you through the summer, of course. As you know, you can reach us in a myriad of different ways. My email is ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. We're on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. Jonathan, as per usual, if you could bring us home, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, I'm jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. You can contact us. We'll also post some ideas maybe to mitigate some of the effects of losing data. Encryption, for example, is one that springs to mind. And do keep suggesting your topics to us. We'll speak to you next week when we'll no doubt have thought of another riveting topic for our conversations. But meantime, all that remains is to say thank you for listening.